An evangelist was preaching at a Christian college. At the end of the services, one of the services, a lovely young lady came up to him and with urgency in her voice and in her countenance said, "I need to talk to you." After most of the crowd had left, he made time to talk to her, and they sat on the edge of the platform. She wept as she told her story. A few months before that time, her dad, a godly man, had been killed suddenly in an automobile accident. She had handled her dad's death pretty well, until the time came for the family to go through Dad's personal things. Everyone in the family was shocked to find out that Dad had kept a personal diary. Neither his wife nor any of the children knew he had done this. They were astonished to read a note for every day going back for several years. They were blessed and delighted to read page after page of thoughts and happenings from Dad's life. Many of them they didn't know anything about. Then they saw something that caused each of them to get really excited. They found a page for each of the children, and on each page were the prayers he had been praying for each of his children. There was a page for Joe. It read something like this: "Oh God, Joe's a good boy. He loves you. He's trying to make it through college so he can be more effective for you. The finances are tight. God, please, Lord, supply his needs." Then there was a page for Susie. It read something like this: "Oh Lord, Susie is a good girl. She's trying to serve you. Thank you for her. Bless her. Strengthen her. Watch over her." The girl telling the story said she got very excited. She grabbed the diary and said, "I want to find my page." She flipped over several pages, and there was her name written across the top of a page. Almost breathlessly, she read what was written underneath her name. One of the most important men in the entire Bible is the Old Testament king whose name meant beloved. I'm talking, of course, about David. From the time David is first introduced to us as a young man in 1 Samuel 16 until his death in 1 Kings chapter 2, which is about 60 pages or so in my Bible, David is a key man. And the way he dealt with others and the way others related to him was apparently something God wanted us to see and to understand. In 1 Samuel 13, 14, David is described as a man after God's own heart. Apparently, David's heart was a lot like God's heart. David's name is mentioned 968 times, from Ruth chapter 4 to Revelation chapter 22, which is more than any other person I could find in the entire Bible. The name Jesus occurs 942 times. Of course, his name would just be in the New Testament, and David is all the way through the Bible nearly. The name Moses 784 times. The name Judah 755 times. The name Jacob 345 times. Abraham 280 times. Joseph 229 times. And I certainly don't believe that David was more important than Jesus, but he is certainly a very important man. I want to speak this morning on the subject, understanding loyalty in a disloyal world. And I want you to notice with me principles of loyalty and disloyalty in the lives of David and the men who surrounded David's life. Why David? David wasn't a perfect man, but he was a righteous leader. The Psalms David wrote, including the 23rd Psalm, show David's heart for God. When God wanted us to understand what kind of leader King Jesus is going to be, at least three times we're told that he will sit on the throne of his father David. David was a leader who knew how to weep and how to rejoice, how to repent and how to forgive, how to fight battles and how to let God fight his battles, how to make decisions and how to issue commands, how to be patient and tolerant, and also how to carry out justice. David was, in every sense of the word, one of the greatest leaders in the Bible or in all of history. What can we learn about loyalty from this man's life? Number one, wisely and consciously choose those to whom you give your loyalty. In the life of David are two pictures of loyalty that are as great as any pictures in the Bible or in history. One relates to Jonathan, and the other relates to Ittai. David's encounter with Ittai takes place at one of the lowest points in David's life. David's son Absalom had sat in the gate of the city and stolen the hearts of the men of Israel from their king. Then, at an appointed time, under the guise of doing something very spiritual and religious, Absalom had trumpets blown and the announcement made that he was the king. He mounted a full-scale rebellion against his father. In danger for his very life, David fled the city of Jerusalem. As David was leaving, he ran into Ittai. Now here's a man you ought to remember and emulate. He gets my award for Mr. Loyalty in the Bible. 2 Samuel 15, verse 19, "Then said the king to Ittai the Gittite, Wherefore goest thou also with us? Return to thy place and abide with the king, for thou art a stranger and also an exile. Whereas thou camest but yesterday, should I this day make thee go up and down with us?" He hadn't even hardly been in the kingdom for very long. "Seeing I go whither I may, return thou and take back thy brethren. Mercy and truth be with thee." David says, "Ittai, you don't owe me any loyalty. You just arrived here from another country. I haven't done anything to earn or to deserve your loyalty." And Ittai answered the king and said, "As the Lord liveth, and as my lord the king liveth, surely in what place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there also will thy servant be." Ittai's response was incredible. He says, "King, when I came here, I chose you to be my king. Wherever you go, I go. If you die, then I die. And if you live, then I live." It actually, if you remember the story, sounds very similar to what Ruth said to Naomi when they were headed from Moab back to Bethlehem. And she said, "Whither thou goest, I will go," and so on. Ittai owed David no loyalty, but he hazarded everything for what looked like a lost cause. Now, wait a minute. I just told the stories of two men and their relationship with David. One man. Here is Absalom rebelling against him while Ittai is ready to die for him. What is the difference? What is going on here? Ittai was doing something Absalom, David's son, should have done. Ittai has wisely and consciously chosen to give his loyalty to his king. He doesn't know what's going on with Absalom. He doesn't need to know what's going on. He knows that King David is a man of God. He is God's anointed. He is the king. He's a poor communicator. He is a weak father. He is overly patient and tolerant, and those are only a few of his faults. Ittai may or may not know those things. It doesn't matter. His loyalty is chosen and will not change. Loyalty depends on you, not on the person you're following. You should wisely and consciously choose those to whom you give your loyalty. You can give respect and acceptance to just about anyone, but not loyalty. I can give acceptance and respect to the president of a foreign country, but not loyalty unless I'm actually a citizen of that country. I can give acceptance and respect to the Pope, but not loyalty. Loyalty is more than faithfulness. A person may be so faithful to a task that he appears to be loyal to the leader, when in reality his faithfulness may be self-serving. Loyalty is more than cooperation. Cooperation may simply be something necessary to get a job done. Loyalty is an attitude of the heart that cannot be neutral. I remember once counseling with a young man having conflicts with his dad. Honestly, the young man's dad was somewhat an unreasonable man and very difficult to get along with. This young man was trying to avoid conflict by simply avoiding his dad. I said to him, "Humility and loyalty are not neutral qualities. They are positive and active. You must not just avoid your dad. You must seek to serve him and answer his pride with humility and his anger with meekness." Loyalty is not neutrality. Loyalty is not the absence of disloyalty. Loyalty is not simply refusing to listen to bad information. Loyalty actively defends. Loyalty is positive. Loyalty doesn't just say, I don't want to hear that. Loyalty says, let me tell you some things about this person that will help you really know him. Ladies, don't marry a man unless you're willing to give him your loyalty for the rest of your life. Men, don't take a job unless you're going to give your loyalty to the people for whom you work. Don't join any church that is not preaching and teaching the Word of God, trying to win souls and leading people to live godly lives. Once you find such a church, get in and be loyal. Choose loyalty to our country's leaders. I read where a top Hollywood movie star said he was going to leave the country if George W. Bush was elected president. I've been wondering when he's going to do it, haven't you? All of us must continually look. Watch me now. All of us must continually look two directions. We must continually look up to those over us, and we must continually look down to those who are following us. And when I talk about looking up and down, I'm talking about God-ordained authority structures, not attitudes. No one should ever look down on anyone. Everybody should treat everybody else in an equal manner, with respect. But it is more important in the authority structures that God has created, it is more important to know whom I am under and that I am following him or her than it is to know whom I am over and that they are following me. How could Absalom rebel? He lost his respect for his father, and when he did, he just quit looking up. It was really easy, once he quit looking up, to start looking down and trying to find people to go with him in his rebellion. One of the most interesting passages in the Bible to me is Luke chapter 7, where a centurion asked Jesus to heal his servant. But when Jesus started to go to his house, the centurion said, Lord, trouble not thyself, for I am not worthy that thou shouldest enter under my roof. Wherefore neither thought I myself worthy to come unto thee, but say in a word, and my servant shall be healed. Then he explains how he understands this, for I also am a man set under authority, having under me soldiers. Notice he looked up first before he looked down. And I say unto one, go, and he goeth, and to another, come, and he cometh, and to my servant, do this, and he doeth it. When Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him, and turned him about, and said unto the people that followed him, I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel. What was it that amazed Jesus about this centurion? It was that he said that he was a man under authority instead of saying he was a man in authority. He was a centurion. He had great authority, but he wasn't thinking about who he was over. He was thinking about who he was under. All of us are continually under authority. That is, we are not just followers, but we are leader followers. We are both following and leading at the same time. The centurion was both a follower and a leader. But he recognized that his right to lead came from his loyalty as a follower. And his power as a centurion came from his loyalty. That's the reason he understood authority, and that's the reason Jesus said he had such great faith. A leader follower must always remember that the day he forgets to follow is the day he forfeits his right to lead. The power to lead comes from the loyalty to follow. Jesus marveled at the faith of this man who said he was under authority. It is a lack of faith and a self-centered focus to concentrate more on those following me than on those whom I am following. Think about this. It is easier for a wife to see her children disobeying her than it is for her to see herself disobeying her husband. It is easier for a husband to see his wife disobeying him than it is for him to see himself disobeying his employer. It is easier for any of us to see those under us disobeying us than it is for us to see ourselves disobeying God. Are you loyal? Number two, give loyalty to people and positions, not just to personalities. Give loyalty to people and positions, not just to personalities. Just after David's victory over Goliath, King Saul's captain Abner brought David in to see the king. Saul's son Jonathan was standing there listening in. It was a very interesting day as David is actually standing there holding the head of the slain giant Goliath. And he's standing there with Abner and Saul, and Jonathan, Saul's son, is standing there. And as David talked that day, he revealed his heart for God. And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, that's a picture of loyalty, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him and gave it to David and his garments, even to his sword and to his bow and to his girdle. Sometimes God will bring across your path providentially some godly person who should be your friend for life. I can think of several people in my life that God has done that way. Give that person your loyalty. And once you do, never take it away. He or she will face difficulties. Stand by him. Pray for him. Encourage him. Do all in your power to lift him. Brother Davis, what if he compromises? Then talk to him, appeal to him, and if necessary, separate from him, but don't remove your loyalty. Why? Your loyalty is what he will need in order to find his way back to the path that he left. Jonathan's loyalty here was not just to David the man, though it was that. When Jonathan gave his robe and sword and bow and girdle to David, Jonathan was recognizing that David was really God's choice to be the king of Israel. Even though Jonathan was King Saul's son, and he was in the lineage to be the next king, he yielded his right to be king and gave his loyalty to David. That is phenomenal. I said give loyalty to people and positions, not just to personalities. How easy it would be to be loyal if every person in authority over our lives was a kind, easygoing, likable, wise, godly, perfect person who wanted to meet our every need. Have you ever noticed that it isn't always that way? Sometimes God requires you and me to give loyalty to someone because they're in authority over us, even though they have a terrible personality. King Saul was an angry, jealous, vengeful, unreasonable man. David had done nothing wrong, but Saul was jealous of David and tried to smite him to the wall with a javelin while David was playing music for the king. David had to run for his life, and he ran for months. Over and over, Saul tried to kill David, but David never ceased to be loyal to Saul. Why? 9 times David referred to Saul as, quote, the Lord's anointed. David recognized that Saul's position was given to him by God, and therefore King Saul deserved loyalty even from the man he wanted to kill. Now, that didn't mean David had to stand there and let him kill him, but he did still give him his loyalty. What is your excuse for being disloyal? Is it any harder for you to be loyal to your father than it was for Jonathan to be loyal to his father, Saul? I mean, it wasn't just David had problems with Saul. Jonathan had huge problems as a son with his father. In 1 Samuel 14, Saul issued an irrational order that no soldier was to eat anything while they fought against the Philistines all day long that day. Jonathan didn't even know about the order. While walking through the woods, Jonathan saw some honey and dipped his rod in it and tasted it. And when Saul found out about it, he said, "Tell me what thou hast done." And Jonathan told him and said, "I did but taste a little honey with the end of the rod that was in mine hand, and lo, I must die." And Saul answered, "God do so and more also, for thou shalt surely die, Jonathan." Notice the angry spirit in Saul's words. And the people said unto Saul, look, they come to Jonathan to rescue her. He'd have been dead. The father would have put his son to death because he had issued an irrational order and the son didn't even know it and disobeyed it. And the people said to Saul, "Shall Jonathan die who hath wrought this great salvation in Israel? God forbid, as the Lord lives, there shall not one hair of his head fall to the ground, for he hath wrought with God this day." So the people rescued Jonathan that he died not. I ask again, is it any harder for you to be loyal to your father than it was for Jonathan to be loyal to his father? Jonathan's father wanted to kill Jonathan's best friend, David. And his best friend was a good friend, not a bad friend. Yet much later, when Saul died in battle, Jonathan died at his side. Loyalty to Christ is right, and disloyalty is wrong. Loyalty to parents is right, and disloyalty is wrong. Loyalty to your husband is right, and disloyalty is wrong. Loyalty to the mayor or governor is right, and disloyalty is wrong. Loyalty to your employer is right, and disloyalty is wrong. I didn't say they were always right. Nobody ever is. I said loyalty is always right. If you give loyalty based on personality, then you may well give loyalty to the wrong person. Daniel is a great illustration. Daniel, in the book of Daniel, was loyal with his three friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, to a wicked king, even when he could not eat the meat and drink the wine that the king gave him. He was still loyal. He appealed, and he won his appeal because of his loyalty. Loyalty is not the same as blind obedience, but loyalty is still right. Are you loyal? Number three, loyalty to human leadership is really loyalty to God Himself. Pastor Davis, that's a pretty strong statement. Can you give me scriptures for that? I'm going to give you a whole bunch of them here in just a moment. Loyalty is a choice that you make and then prove over and over again for the rest of your life. Loyalty doesn't change based on rumors. Loyalty depends on you, not on the person that you are following. Now you must learn to distinguish between loyalty and worship. Worship is something you give to God alone. When some people tried to worship Paul in the New Testament, they started to sacrifice. He rebuked them and he said, No, that's wrong. You don't do that. Worship, you don't worship anybody but God. You don't worship Mary. You don't worship angels. You don't worship anybody but God. Loyalty is something you give to God and to people because your worship and obedience to God demands it. The only way to give loyalty is to recognize the hand of God choosing this person for you to be loyal to, or to see the hand of God placing this one over you in authority. At any time in our life, God may raise up somebody and place them over us in authority. David referred to King Saul 9 times as the Lord's anointed. David had a sister named Zeruiah who had 3 sons by the names of Joab, Abishai, and Asahel. Let me say them again. Joab, Abishai, and Asahel. And I don't know whether I'm pronouncing those right. I've heard them pronounced every way under the sun. I'm just doing the best I can, all right? All 3 of those nephews of David's were mighty warriors. Abishai was with David. These are his nephews now. Abishai was with David in 1 Samuel 26 when King Saul came, while Saul was still alive, and he was chasing David. He came with 3,000 men to the wilderness of Ziph to seek and kill David. Saul set up camp and went to sleep, and David saw Saul and his army while they were asleep. So David and Abishai came to the people by night, and behold, Saul lay sleeping within the trench, and his spear stuck in the ground at his bolster, but Abner and the people lay round about him. Then said Abishai to David, God hath delivered thine enemy into thine hand this day. Now therefore let me smite him, I pray thee, with a spear even to the earth at once, and I will not smite him the second time. Only take me 1 time, king, I'll get the job done. And David said to Abishai, destroy him not. For who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? Why didn't David let Abishai kill King Saul? Because he saw him as the Lord's anointed. David had to run from Saul just to survive, but he never quit being loyal. More than 25 years later, David was running for his life from his son Solomon, who had taken the throne. Abishai is again by David's side. Shimei curses and throws stones at David. Abishai wanted to kill Shimei, but David stopped him. Later in 2 Samuel 19 we read, but Abishai the son of Zeruiah answered and said, shall not Shimei be put to death for this? Because he cursed the Lord's anointed. Now wait a minute, those 9 other times it was David talking. Now it is not David talking, it is Abishai talking. And this is the only other time in the Scriptures that that phrase, the Lord's anointed is used. Why was Abishai loyal to David all those years? Because he learned from David that the king was the Lord's anointed, and he applied it to the king who was David. Loyalty to human leadership is really loyalty to God Himself. Romans 13:1 says, Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Those who hold elected or appointed governmental office have been given that office by God. When we're loyal to them, we're really being loyal to God. I didn't say they were always right. I didn't say we shouldn't appeal to them. I said we should be loyal to them. Ephesians 5:22, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. Colossians 3:20, children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord. Ephesians 6:5, servants, be obedient to them that are in masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling in singleness of your heart. Keep your heart single, moved in the right direction, as unto Christ, with good will, doing service as to the Lord and not to men. Here's the only way you can do this. Wives, you need to look past your husband and see behind him that the Lord is really the one to whom you're in submission when you follow your husband. Did you know when you fight with your husband over little, picky, incidental issues that don't amount to anything, but you just feel like you've just got to have your way in this, you're really fighting with the Lord. Your argument is not really with your husband, it's really with God. Because God is the one. Loyalty to human leadership is really loyalty to God Himself. Children, you need to look past your parents and see that God is the one who placed your parents in their position as parents. I didn't say they were perfect. I didn't say husbands are perfect. Nobody's perfect. I said God is the one who places people in positions of authority. Employee, you need to look past your employer and see that God placed your boss in his position over you. Obedience to authority is obedience to God. Loyalty is looking for opportunities to be obedient to earthly authority because it sees God's authority behind it. And disloyalty, or a disloyal spirit against earthly authorities, is really disloyalty against God Himself. In any situation where you wonder whether or not you've been loyal or disloyal, simply ask yourself this question: if the leader had been Jesus Himself, would I have responded any differently? Follow no man to hell. Follow no man into sin or false doctrine. But do not forget that loyalty to human leadership is really loyalty to God Himself. Are you loyal? Number four, this is very important. Loyalty is needed to make you what you ought to be. You see, it's easy to think of loyalty as a follower doing what a leader wants done, but loyalty is much more than that. Loyalty is not just needed for the person being served. Loyalty is needed much more by the server himself, because it is the follower's loyalty to the leader that helps make the follower what he ought to be. A lady was counseling with my wife. The lady said, other family members tell us that the reason our marriage is strong is because we just don't have the problems that they have. But that's not it. It's because when we've had problems, we've sought counsel and we followed the counsel that we got. That couple's loyalty makes the difference in their lives. A young man about to go to Bible college said to his parents, if I even see a girl that I think is pretty, you'll be the first to know about it. That young man's loyalty may save him many heartaches. It was Elisha's loyalty to the great man of God, Elijah, who incidentally had some major weaknesses, that enabled Elisha to have a double portion of the Spirit of God upon his life after Elijah was translated to heaven. Lot's loyalty to Uncle Abraham kept his life straight until their herdsmen had a disagreement and they went different directions, with Lot winding up in Sodom and then ultimately fleeing for his life. Abraham had some faults, but Lot needed him worse than he knew. Lot really should have kept his loyalty with Abraham at any cost. Loyalty is needed to make you what you ought to be. The Bible is real plain in this area in relation to church leadership and how that disloyalty to church leadership can damage you. Hebrews 13:7. Obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls as they that must give account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief. Read the last statement with me, would you please? For that is unprofitable for you. If you're not loyal, you may not know till you get to heaven all your life could have been. Disloyalty drastically cuts back on life potential. About 15 years ago, God sent to our church a godly retired preacher who had started and pastored several churches. Evan Bainham. How many of you remember him? Evan Bainham knew more about pastoring and preaching than I could know in several lifetimes. I miss him. He drove 35 miles here faithfully for the last years of his life until God took him to heaven in 1988. Do you know what Brother Bainham used to do? He would come and check with me before he'd go preach anywhere. Now, of course, I never had a problem with it. But this man who was twice my age would say this to me, "You're my pastor and I won't go anywhere or do anything you don't want me to do." That's amazing. Why would he do that? Because he was a man who wanted the blessing and the profitability of being under authority. Loyalty is needed to make you what you ought to be. Are you loyal? Number five, a loyal person seeks to understand both the words and the heart of his leader. Why is this important? Because loyalty is more than just fulfilling orders and commands. Loyalty is concerned with making the one who is the leader a success. It is constantly in the back of the mind of the follower. It is constantly in the back of the mind of the child or the wife. How can I make my dad or my husband a success? What can I do to help him? The loyal follower realizes that his success in life is found in pleasing God, which also means pleasing the one God has given you to serve. Loyalty may be enhanced by the follower trying to mentally place himself in the place of the leader. There are times when the child ought to put himself or herself in the place of dad or mom. Why? When you do that, you're more likely to feel the heartbeat of the leader. Did you know strong leaders are often not good communicators? They're poor communicators. And if you don't get the heart of the leader, you won't know which way to go. You won't know which way he's going. You won't know which way to go. And you yourself may then wind up at the wrong place. A loyal person seeks to understand both the words and the heart of his leader. If a man disobeys the one in authority, he is disloyal. But if a man only does just what he's told to do, he is still not truly loyal. There is more to loyalty than raw obedience. Loyalty is obedience from the heart. True loyalty is heart loyalty. Ephesians 6:5 and 6 says, "Servants, be obedient to them that are your masters, not with eye service as men pleasers." You see, surface loyalty is disloyalty. Not with eye service as men pleasers. Surface loyalty is disloyalty. But as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, true loyalty is heart loyalty. Loyalty looks for ways to please the one in authority. There is a spirit about loyalty that gives loyalty its power. Loyalty listens. Loyalty is attentive. In Psalm 123, verse 2, God used a picture of human loyalty to describe what our loyalty to God should be like. "Behold, as the eyes of servants look unto their masters, so our eyes wait upon the Lord our God." Watch me, let me illustrate this for you. As the eyes of servants look unto their masters, a servant would stand and watch for his master to move his hand. As the eyes of servants look unto their masters, and then the rest of the verse talks about the lady watching her mistress, and I believe it talks about watching her hand So our eyes wait upon the Lord our God. And the master would be sitting over there, and the servant would simply be watching. And the master would go like this. And the servant would come immediately and say, "What can I do for you?" And so God used the picture of human loyalty to describe what our loyalty to Him should be like. Your loyalty listens. Loyalty is attentive. Loyalty is the son who washes the car without being asked because he knows his father would be pleased. Loyalty is the daughter who joyfully wears clothes that dad wants just because dad wants them. That's loyalty. 2 Samuel 23 described a time when David was warring with the Philistines who had taken the city of Bethlehem. Many times before then, David had drunk the pure, cool, fresh water out of the well at Bethlehem. But now a battle is raging and is taking place at Bethlehem. The Philistines have the city. What David said in the middle of that battle wasn't really a command. It was really, the best way I could describe it was a soliloquy. David said this, "Oh, that one would give me drink of the water of the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate." Now, he said, he's looking across there. Bethlehem is taken by the Philistines. And he is looking across and he's, "Oh, that water over there would be so good. It's so dry out here. The battle is so hot." David had three mighty men who overheard when their king spoke. And the three mighty men break through the host of the Philistines and drew water out of the well of Beth. Do you realize what they're doing? They're, three men are breaking through a whole line of an army, drew water out of the well of Bethlehem by the gate, took it and brought it to David. That is phenomenal loyalty. David didn't even give a command. He could have said, "Go get me a drink of water." They would have been duty bound and honor bound with their lives at stake to obey the king. David didn't do that. All he did was express a desire. But to a person who has learned true loyalty, the wish of the commander is a royal command. A loyal person seeks to understand both the words and the heart of his leader. There's some wonderful stories from wartime about loyalty. And in World War II, there was a group of men called Ike's Boys. They guarded General Dwight Eisenhower. One of those men told how, quote, he and others once stocked a pond with fish from a nearby creek after overhearing Eisenhower's wish to go fishing. General Robert E. Lee sent word to General Stonewall Jackson during the Civil War that he would like to see him whenever he happened to be in the area. As soon as Jackson got the message, he rode 8 miles on horseback through a heavy snowstorm. When he walked in before General Lee, General Lee said to him, "Stonewall, I didn't send for you. I only said the next time you rode this way, I'd like to see you." "I know that," replied Stonewall Jackson. "But you said you wish to see me, and your slightest wish is a command to me. Are you loyal?" Number six, loyalty is seen the clearest when the opportunity for disloyalty is the greatest. Loyalty is seen the clearest when the opportunity for disloyalty is the greatest. A disloyal person is given great opportunities by God to show loyalty. Who would have criticized David if he had been disloyal to Saul when Saul was trying to kill him? But it was against the dark backdrop of Saul's ugliness that David's loyalty shone through like a diamond ring looks the most beautiful when placed on a dark background. In your life, there will be tests of loyalty. What do I mean by that? In your life, it may be that your father at some time will be angry and unjust. Your mother will be partial to your sister. Your pastor may say something in front of the whole church that you're just sure is a slap to you personally. Your employer will give the hardest job with the filthiest conditions and the most ridiculous deadlines to you. Now you can do one of two things. You can pout, complain, whine to others, and develop a spirit and attitude of disloyalty, or you can recognize that this may be the greatest opportunity of your life to demonstrate great loyalty. Listen to 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 18. "Servants, be subject to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the froward, the difficult ones. For this is thankworthy If a man for conscience toward God, he remembers that God is the one who placed him under authority. For conscience toward God, endure grief, suffering wrongfully. But what glory is it if when ye be buffeted for your faults, you shall take it patiently? You do wrong and you get buffeted for it, that's one thing. But if when you do well and suffer for it, you take it patiently, this is acceptable to God. That's where real loyalty is seen. For even hereunto were you called. Why? Because that's what Jesus did. Because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that ye should follow his steps. Who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth, never did anything wrong, and yet when he was reviled, he reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judges righteously. I said earlier that David was a righteous leader. But there was a time in David's life when lust blinded David's heart and mind. While his army was off in battle, David sat at home and lusted after Bathsheba, the wife of one of David's warriors, Uriah the Hittite. David committed adultery and then received word that Bathsheba was pregnant. To cover his sin, he sent for Uriah the Hittite. Now, this is a dark, ugly background, isn't it? Behold, in 2 Samuel 11, one of the most powerful stories of loyalty in all of the Bible, David said to Uriah, "Go down to thy house and wash thy feet." And Uriah departed out of the king's house. There followed him a mess of meat from the king. "Have a party, Uriah." But Uriah slept at the door of the king's house with all the servants of his lord and went not down to his house. And when they had told David, saying, "Uriah went not down unto his house," David said to Uriah, "Camest thou not from thy journey? Why then didst thou not go down into thine house?" And Uriah said to David, "The ark and Israel and Judah abide in tents. And my lord Joab and the servants of my lord are encamped in the open field. Shall I then go into mine house to eat and to drink and to lie with my wife? As thou livest and as thy soul liveth, I will not do this thing." Can you imagine how low down as a skunk David must have felt about that time? Without even knowing what he was doing, Uriah's self-control and loyalty were a powerful rebuke to David's indulgence and disloyalty. Uriah was sent back to the battlefront with the orders for his own execution in his hands. Go to the wall of the city, get close to the city until Uriah dies. It's a horrible story. But there is a God on the throne who is seeing it all. And you would be hard-pressed to find a greater illustration of loyalty anywhere in the Bible or in all of history. Loyalty is seen the clearest when the opportunity for disloyalty is the greatest. Are you loyal? Number 7, a person demonstrates where his loyalties lie by those to whom he passes praise. Let me say it again. A person demonstrates where his loyalties lie by those to whom he passes praise. Have you ever noticed how Jesus was continually demonstrating loyalty by passing praise to the Father? John 10:25, "The works that I do in my Father's name, they bear witness of me." Jesus said that all the works he did were not done in his name, but in his Father's name. He said, "These works that I'm doing, they're my Father's name." He was passing the praise. John 10:32, Jesus answered them, "Many good works have I showed you from my Father." John 14:28, "You've heard how I said unto you, I go away and come again unto you. If you love me, you would rejoice, because I said, I go unto the Father, for my Father is greater than I." Now, that's not a denial of deity. It is an affirmation of loyalty. John 15:15, "All things that I have heard of my Father, I have made known unto you." Jesus was passing the praise to the Father for all the incredibly wise things that He was teaching His disciples. I was in a conversation with a lady and I commented to her that there was great wisdom in the statement she had just said to me. And immediately she replied, "Well, if it was wise, I'm sure I learned it from my husband, because he is such a wise man." And at that point, I was amazed at both her wisdom and her loyalty. I love it. When I comment to a young man that the lawn he's mowed looks neat and orderly, and he replies that his dad or mom taught him how to work, passing the praise to his parent. Did you know that this is the way that a disloyal person checks to find out whether or not you are also disloyal. If you are praised and you accept the praise instead of passing it along to those you are serving, you may at that moment, without knowing it, become a candidate to hear negative thoughts about your leader. A preacher who was widely known and highly respected for his wisdom was called about a church in another state that was having severe critical internal problems. The church really was experiencing what Paul described as possible for a church to experience in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 20, when he said, "For I fear, lest when I come, I shall not find you such as I would, and that I shall be found unto you such as ye would not." He said, "I'm worried about what I'm going to find when I come to the church at Corinth. Lest I come and there be debates, verbal fights in the church, envyings, wraths, angry, fierce, boiling attitudes and words, strifes, backbitings, whisperings, lots of gossiping going on, swellings, people acting proudly, tumults." Tumults referred to a church in a state of disorder, filled with commotion, instability, disturbance, confusion. You say, "Pastor Davis, is it possible for a church to be that way?" It's not only a possibility. It seems like a regular practice for many churches. Have you noticed that? The church that called my wise preacher friend had already chosen sides and was ready to split. I mean, this was a conflagration taking place. By the time he arrived there, the pastor's followers were sitting on one side of the room and the assistant pastor's followers were sitting on the other side of the room. Everyone felt that the issues were clear. They'd chosen sides. Both sides, though, had previously agreed to let this guest preacher come in and mediate the fight, and they would at least listen to what he had to say. Now let me ask you, what would you say that could possibly bring peace to such a fiercely divided group? How could you allow people to speak and yet keep the meeting from turning into a shouting match with people more deeply divided when they left than they were when they came? God gave this guest preacher such wisdom that the problem was almost completely solved before he ever arrived at the church. Now, I'm telling the story as accurately as possible after hearing it told probably 10 or 11 years ago. The guest preacher asked that the assistant pastor pick him up at the airport. After exchanging general greetings, they found themselves in the car, were on their way to the church, and the preacher began to ask questions. He said to the driver, the assistant pastor, "How long you been at the church?" "Several years." "Have you had a fruitful ministry?" "Yes, God has seemed to bless my ministry in a wonderful way. I suppose there are people in the church who have really appreciated your ministry." "Yes, sir, occasionally." "And they've told you that your ministry was a blessing to them?" "Yes, sir, occasionally." "And what have you said when they told you this?" I just said, "Thank you." And at that point, the preacher began to groan and sigh. He bowed his head, put his hands to his face and said, "Oh, no. Oh, no, don't tell me that..." "You said what?" I said, "Thank you." "Oh, oh, 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 God, help us. Oh, 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 God, this is hot." "You said what?" "I said, thank you." "Oh, God, oh, dear Lord, help us." The assistant pastor was shocked. He said, "What are you talking about? I just said, thank you." And the preacher just kept groaning, sighing, grieving, and crying out to God. Finally, the assistant pastor said, "Tell me what I did that was wrong. I really don't know what it was." And the preacher, with a very solemn, serious, broken expression, said, "Sir, you had an opportunity to demonstrate loyalty, and instead, you demonstrated disloyalty in the worst sort of way. When those people told you that they appreciated your ministry, you should have passed the praise for your ministry to the pastor. You wouldn't have had a ministry there without the pastor. You should have said, please thank the pastor. If it weren't for him, I wouldn't be able to be here. My ministry is really his ministry." When you didn't do that, you create an atmosphere where people could share with you the areas where they had disagreements with the pastor, and the people would begin to follow you instead of the pastor. And then the preacher just began groaning and sighing and grieving again. Oh, God. Oh, God, this is so horrible. Oh, God, what are we going to do? Then there was silence for a while. Finally, the assistant pastor said, "What do I do?" And humbly, my preacher friend replied, "You need to confess your wrong before all of those who have taken your side and ask them all to forgive you and to put their loyalty back with the pastor." When they walked into the church, they entered a large fellowship hall area set up with chairs. On one side were those following the pastor. On the other side were those following the assistant pastor. The guest preacher took charge, opened in prayer, then explained that the assistant pastor needed to say a few words. The assistant pastor got up and with tears explained his wrong. It was broken. He asked forgiveness. He asked, "Everybody there, please forgive me. What I have done is wrong. Please, all of you, put your loyalty back with the pastor. I should have never done what I did." One man got up, said some angry things, stormed out. The rest of the church, broken, was reconciled like that. And people learned the tremendously important truth that a person demonstrates where his loyalties lie by those to whom he passes praise. Young ladies, when somebody compliments your cookies, tell them your mama taught you how to bake them. When somebody compliments your ability to sing, tell them that the minister of music or the assistant pastor or your parents or somebody trained you to sing. Anywhere you serve, serve so that God gets the glory, those you are serving get the credit, and you get the joy of loyalty. A person demonstrates where his loyalties lie by those to whom he passes praise. Are you loyal? Number 8, loyalty is destroyed by bitterness or becoming offended. Loyalty is destroyed by bitterness or becoming offended. Two of David's most loyal, trusted men were his counselor Ahithophel and his captain or general Joab. Outside of Jesus and Solomon, the wisest man to ever live may have been Ahithophel. He is the only man in the Bible about whom we are told that his counsel was as wise as if he had walked into the Holy of Holies and gotten counsel directly at the Ark of the Covenant from God Himself. We're told that in 2 Samuel 16:23. But Ahithophel got bitter, apparently because of something that happened in his family. Ahithophel, now you're going to have to follow this carefully, you'll miss it. Ahithophel was the father of Eliam, who was the father of Bathsheba. Eliam was also one of David's mighty men, along with Uriah, the husband of Bathsheba. Ahithophel had cause to become bitter from three directions in his family at once. His granddaughter had been stolen from her husband for adulterous purposes. His granddaughter's husband has been murdered, and one of his son's best friends is gone. If Satan can get you bitter and destroy your loyalty, then he will. And if he cannot do it any other way, he can almost always use family relationships to do it. Ahithophel continued with surface loyalty for years. But when Absalom instigated his rebellion, Ahithophel went immediately with him. And Ahithophel gave advice to Solomon that, according to the Word of God, if it had been followed, would have destroyed David and made Absalom victorious. When that advice was not followed because of somebody who was loyal to David, one of the wisest men to ever live, Ahithophel, set his house in order and went out and hung himself because he knew he, Absalom, and all the followers might well be dead men. David's nephew Joab appears to have been loyal to David for several years as the captain or general of his army. He's called both. But Joab also got bitter, apparently, again, because of something that happened in his family. Abner had been King Saul's captain or general, and had made Saul's son Ishbosheth king in Saul's place. One day there was a battle between Joab's men and Abner's men, and Abner's men were beaten and running away, and Asahel, Joab's baby brother, was chasing after Abner. And Abner said again to Asahel, "Turn thee aside from following me. Wherefore should I smite thee to the ground? How then should I hold up my face to Joab thy brother?" Howbeit he refused to turn aside. Wherefore Abner with the hinder end of the spear smote him under the fifth rib, that the spear came out behind him, and he fell down there and died in the same place. In the next chapter, Abner comes to David to make peace and give him the kingdom. It is now time of peace, not a time of war. But Joab wants revenge for his baby brother's death. Joab deceitfully takes Abner aside like he wants to talk to him. Then he stabs him to death. And afterward, when David heard it, he said, "I and my kingdom are guiltless before the Lord forever from the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. Let it rest on the head of Joab and on all his father's house." He curses him here. "Let there not fail from the house of Joab one that hath an issue, or that is a leper, or that leans on a staff, who is crippled, or that falls on the sword, or that lacks bread." He says, "Let terrible things happen from now on in Joab's house." And David said to Joab and to all the people that were with him, "Rend your clothes." He commanded Joab to mourn. "Rend your clothes and gird you with sackcloth and mourn before Abner." And King David himself followed the bier or the casket. Loyalty is destroyed by bitterness or becoming offended. Are you loyal? Number 9, a loyal person will not have, cannot have, his own agenda. Joab is now bitter. He is bitter for the rest of his life, and for the rest of his life, as long as he was told to do something that he himself wanted to do, he would do it. He appears to be loyal on the surface, but he's no longer truly loyal to David. From now on, he's loyal to himself. Joab has his own agenda. When it comes time to deal with Absalom, David doesn't trust Joab. He does something very much out of the ordinary. He calls in 3 men now. Instead of one man leading the army, he's going to divide it up. He calls in Joab, Abishai, Joab's brother, and Ittai the Gittite. You remember Ittai, Mr. Loyalty? Ittai can be trusted. Abishai can be trusted. Abishai is the one. Let me tell you about Abishai, Joab's brother. He's the one who called David the Lord's anointed. You remember? He was also upset over his baby brother Asahel's death, but it did not destroy his loyalty. 3 times in his life, Abishai wanted to kill somebody. Once he wanted to kill King Saul. Twice he wanted to kill Shimei. All 3 times, David said, "Don't kill him," and Abishai obeyed. Abishai wasn't a weakling by any means. He was not a, quote, yes man by any means. 2 Samuel 23:18 describes how Abishai fought and killed 300 men single-handedly with a spear. In 2 Samuel 21, David and his men were battling the Philistines. Abishai was close by to David, and a colossal, powerful, raging giant named Ishbibenob, probably a son of Goliath, came after David with a new sword. David was weak and faint. Abishai saw what was happening, stepped in and killed the giant and saved David's life. Abishai's no weakling. And he wasn't a yes man who never thought for himself, but he was loyal. He could be trusted. Ittai could be trusted. Abishai can be trusted, but Joab cannot be trusted. So David divides the army among the 3 of them. The king, what is he doing? He is now cutting back on Joab's responsibility and thereby trying to neutralize some of Joab's power, influence, and disloyalty. To those who understand the principles involved, David's extraordinary patience here is actually beginning to turn into tolerance of evil. Honestly, if you study the whole passage, you'd almost be forced to say David really should have relieved Joab of his command before now. David gives specific instructions to these 3 captains. 2 Samuel 18:5, "And the king commanded Joab and Abishai and Ittai, saying, deal gently for my sake with the young man, even with Absalom. And all the people heard when the king gave all the captains charge concerning Absalom. Don't take Absalom's life." But Joab isn't loyal. Joab has his own agenda. And a man with his own agenda is really doing the same thing God says Lucifer did in Isaiah 14, verse 13 and 14. For thou hast said in thine heart, I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation. I will be like the Most High. I will make the decision, not the person in authority. Joab's already made up his mind what he will do. He did it before with Abner and was able to keep his position as captain or general. He'll do it again now. Do you know, if you were to crawl inside Joab's mind and listen to his thinking processes, they're probably going something like this. I'm so loyal to David that I think I know better than he does. And just because you, David, have decided that the best way to win this war is by sparing Absalom doesn't mean you're right. My way's better than your way. You'll never hear it. But you'll never hear it, so I'll just have to go ahead and do it. So I'm going to go against your wishes for your own good. It is not possible. Hear me? It is not possible for a loyal person to listen, smile, and then go and do whatever he wants to do. Joab finds Absalom hanging by his hair from the limb of a tree. And he took three darts in his hand and thrust them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive in the midst of the oak. All the reasons why David wanted to spare rebellious Absalom, we may never know. When one in authority makes decisions, those following may not always understand. That is one reason why loyalty is so important. One reason may have been that David knew that the grief would be more than he could bear. So what does this loyal murderer Joab do? He scorns David's grief. It is not possible to scorn someone to whom you are loyal. David is now done with Joab. It is too late for any further damage control. Too much damage has already been done. He feels he can trust anyone more than Joab. His appointment to take Joab's place is a super shocker. David appoints, get this is incredible, Amasa, the man who was Absalom's captain, to take Joab's place. He says, I can trust rebel Absalom's captain more than I can trust my own captain. What does Joab do? Joab deceitfully murders Amasa in almost identically the same way he murdered Abner. A loyal person will not have his own agenda. Are you loyal? Number 10. Followers who follow leader followers must keep their loyalty first with the leader. Followers who follow leader followers must keep their loyalty first with the leader. An amazing thing happens in 2 Samuel 23. David is listing who his mighty men were. Guess who is not in the list? By now you probably could figure it out. Joab is not in the list. But you know who is in the list? This is amazing. Joab's armor bearer is in the list of David's mighty men. That's like the golf caddy being recognized and the golfer being forgotten. How could the armor bearer keep his loyalty when the man he was serving under did not? Here's how. Let me have the guys that I asked to come up. Y'all come on up right now, would you please? While being loyal to Joab, he also kept looking past Joab to see the main leader, King David. Younger children, follow your older brothers and sisters when they try to help you do right. But don't ever take your eyes off of dad and mom. Employees, obey whoever is put over you, but don't ever take your eyes off the manager or the owner. Let me describe what I'm talking about here. All right? Let's see. We're going to pretend for just a second that this is God. He ultimately is the one who deserves all our loyalty, worship, honor, and praise. Amen? All right? Here is a man in authority. Now, maybe he is a father. Maybe he's a manager. Maybe he's a principal of a school. Maybe he's the president of a college. Maybe he is the pastor in the church. Maybe whatever. He is the man in authority. Now, here is the assistant manager here. All right? So we've got God. We've got the manager. We've got the assistant manager here. I want you to put your arms on his shoulder. All right? Both of y'all back up a little bit more here. Would you come this way with me? You stay where you are, Brother Turner. Both of y'all come back here just a little bit. In fact, I should have left. Yeah, this is good. Put your hands on his shoulders. Now, here you are following. Maybe you're the employee. Here is the manager, the assistant manager, the employee. Remember that this man is in his position, lost or saved, because God put him in that position. That's his. God gave it to him. God wants to, it takes it away. God often does take it away from people if they're not responsible with that position. Now, this fella is following this man right here. Okay, put your hands on his shoulder. This man is the assistant manager. This is the employee. All right? Now, while I want you fellows to walk forward, hopefully this man is keeping his eyes on the Lord. Anybody in authority has any sense to be keeping their eyes on God. But no person does perfectly. That means there are times when this man goes this way and this man is following him. What must everybody always do? Keep their eyes on the Lord. It doesn't mean you don't follow. These people have not necessarily left God's will. They just, nobody's perfect, that's all. If this person tries to get him to do evil, he must not do it. If this person tries to get him to do evil, he must not do it. But he must follow this man. And, watch this, it might be a little hard for him. This guy is standing pretty tall. But this man must look over this man's shoulder and continually see the manager. He must always be looking at the manager. And everybody ultimately must always be looking at Christ. And they must follow this man. This man may be the father in the home. This may be an older brother. And this may be a younger brother or sister. This younger brother or sister must follow the older brother or sister, but he must always continually look at dad or mom. He must always look past and make sure that this person is always following. What am I saying? I'm saying followers who follow leader followers must keep their loyalty first with the leader. If you don't continually look this way, the leader here and the leader here are the ones that you must always keep your hand. Thank God. What I'm about to describe has never happened here. But I know a church where an assistant pastor was allowed to quietly leave the church after he committed adultery. They didn't expose him. Within the next few weeks, 5 families left the church with him. You know why? They had greater loyalty with the assistant pastor than they did the pastor. As far as I know, those families never knew that the man they followed was an adulterer. But the problem was this. This man was looking more at the assistant pastor than he was at the pastor. And that can happen in a college, it can happen in a church, it can happen in a home, it can happen in a business, it can happen in government, it can happen anywhere. God has created authority structures. The follower, the leader follower must keep his loyalty first with the leader, not just with anybody who is the leader follower coming after him. Thank you, fellas. Give him a hand. They did a good job, all right? And Christian, follow whatever authority God puts over your life, but don't ever take your eyes off of Jesus. Followers who follow leader followers must keep their loyalty first with the leader. Are you loyal? Number 11, only the leader knows if the follower is truly loyal. Only the leader knows if the follower is truly loyal. Let's ask Joab a question during the battle against rebel Absalom. Joab, are you loyal to David? Listen to his answer. Of course I'm loyal. I'm out of here fighting and put my life on the line to save his throne. Hear me. True loyalty is not in the eyes of the follower. True loyalty is in the eyes of the leader. If a child tells me he is loyal, but the parent tells me he is not, I will believe the parent and try to help the child. I guess one reason I'm so interested in you experiencing the blessings of loyalty is because I have personally experienced the consequences of having been disloyal. I'm going to tell you a story in a moment you've never heard before. Most of my life I've been loyal. To this day it's a great joy to me. I mean that. It's a great joy to me to fall underneath the guiding hand of authority. I love to go into a meeting. Wherever I go and preach, I love to go in a meeting and find out how I can serve the pastor there or the missionary if I'm in a foreign country or the convention director. Just find out what they want me to do and do it and not do anything they don't want me to do. Several weeks ago, our mayor called about 5:15 in the afternoon and asked me if I could meet with her and a couple of other people that evening. I already had plans and she wasn't insistent at all, so we just set up another time. After I got off the phone, I began to realize the mayor probably really needed to meet me right away. I called back and asked if the timing was critical, and she replied that it might be, so I just changed my previous schedule. It was about the Lincoln statue. Did you know that after I got there, I had to stand in the hallway outside her office and wait for her to deal with some other problem for over an hour? You know, it didn't bother me at all. It really didn't. I honestly found joy in responding to her authority as the leader of our city. When I came here as your pastor, it was God's calling, God's timing. I'd had a good ministry in the church in Texas where I'd served as associate pastor, minister of music, but felt the timing was right to come here. But there was another reason that I came. There were tensions between the pastor of the church in Joshua, Texas, and me. I had never been a pastor, so I didn't understand the things that I came to understand after I became pastor. There were things he asked me to do. I was willing to do them, but I wanted to do them my way. I could tell he was becoming frustrated with me, but I felt like it was his problem because I was doing my job. There were things he didn't want me to do. I did them anyway, justifying in my mind that I was really doing right in God's sight and saving him time. There were people in the church who liked him or liked me better than him and told me so. And I listened to them. And they told me that if I left, they didn't know whether they would stay. And some of them continued to call me even after I came here. The only way that I know of, looking back upon the problem, that he could have helped me to understand my problem would have been if he had had another pastor sit down with the two of us and talk to me and let me look through a pastor's eyes. But it didn't happen. I thought I was loyal. I really liked the pastor there a lot and wanted to please him. He was gracious to me when I left. And you know, I had not been in Illinois 3 months when I began to realize how disloyal I had been. It began to weigh heavily on me. I was hungry to just be able to call my former pastor in fellowship with him like I was able to do the pastor under whom I was raised. I wrote a letter of apology and asked for his forgiveness. He graciously did so. But somehow or other, the closeness between the two of us never came back. It is honestly something I think about all the time. And it is a void that I have felt for 26 years that I expect will be there till the day I die. There is something about shifting seats from that of follower to leader that sometimes wakes a person up. Hey, get this, you'll see this. There are adults here right now who thought you were loyal to your parents when you were at home. Then you established your own home, got your own children, and began to realize you weren't as loyal to dad and mom as you thought you were. Am I telling the truth? Yes. So you went back and made things right, but you can't turn the clock back, and you wish you could. Let me give you a question that could transform every home, every church, and every business in the country if it was sincerely, humbly asked without any argument or defense. Is there any area of my life where you would like to see me demonstrate greater loyalty? Daughter, what would your dad say if you asked him that question? Son, what would your dad or mom say if you asked them that question? Student, what would your teacher say? Only the leader knows if the follower is truly loyal. Are you loyal? Number one, wisely and consciously choose those to whom you give your loyalty. Number two, give loyalty to people and positions, not just to personalities. Number three, loyalty to human leadership is really loyalty to God Himself. Number four, loyalty is needed to make you what you ought to be. Number five, a loyal person seeks to understand both the words and the heart of his leader. Number six, loyalty is seen the clearest when the opportunity for disloyalty is the greatest. Number seven, a person demonstrates where his loyalties lie by those to whom he pays his praise. Number eight, loyalty is destroyed by bitterness or becoming offended. Number nine, a loyal person will not have his own agenda. Number 10, followers who follow leader followers must keep their loyalty first with the leader. Number 11, only the leader knows if the follower is truly loyal. Number 12, true loyalty is not fully known until the end of life. In any area of life, including loyalty, you must finish the race or lose the reward. There is no true loyalty without consistency. It is not insignificant that 2 Samuel 23, where David lists his mighty men, his most loyal soldiers, begins with this statement: Now these be the last words of David. Who is in this list of mighty men? Abishai and Asahel, Joab's brothers. Idai the Gittite, Uriah the Hittite. 33 other great men, but not Joab. The two men who may have known David better than anyone else were Nathan the prophet and Joab the general. Both men knew how to move David with emotional word pictures. Nathan used the story of the pet lamb being killed by the rich man to bring David to repentance after his adultery. Joab used the woman of Tekoa's story about her two sons to get David to bring Absalom back home. Nathan the prophet used his knowledge of David to help David and preserve the kingdom and promote the will of God. When David was on his deathbed and the wrong man was about to become king, Nathan knew the strategy to use to see that David took action and that Solomon, God's choice and David's choice, became king. Nathan literally saved the lives of Solomon and his mother, and Nathan's sons became leaders in Solomon's kingdom. And Azariah, 1 Kings 4:5, Azariah the son of Nathan was over the officers, and Ziba the son of Nathan was principal officer and the king's friend. It was natural for Nathan's sons to be loyal to Solomon. Why? Their father had been loyal to Solomon's father. Joab, on the other hand, knew how patient and tolerant David was. Joab had enough power that he continually used both David's strengths and weaknesses against David to promote his own agenda. When Adonijah decided to take over the throne, he enlisted Joab's help. When the attempt failed, Joab realized his disloyalty was about to cost him his life. 1 Kings 2:28 says, Joab fled to the tabernacle of the Lord, caught hold on the horns of the altar, and it was told King Solomon that Joab was fled to the tabernacle of the Lord. Behold, he's by the altar. Solomon sent Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, saying, go fall upon him. So Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, went up and fell upon him and slew him. What a tragic end to a potentially great life. Joab's life, strength, boldness, energy, wisdom, shrewdness, talent, common sense, ability, and skill wasted. He is hanging on to the horns of the altar, hoping somehow or other to find mercy, when no mercy for his continual disloyalty is left to be found. Better if Joab had died in his youth while he was still loyal to his king. No wonder Dr. Bob Jones Sr. said, if you ain't loyal, you ain't nothing. Even more sad is that there seemed to be little, if any, spiritual life in Joab. Did he really even know the Lord? And that is the ultimate question for everybody here today. The weeping girl sat at the front of the empty college auditorium. Her godly father had been suddenly killed just months earlier in an automobile accident. The family had found Dad's diary. Joe and Susie had excitedly read the pages of prayers Dad had been praying for them. And the girl grabbed the diary and said, I want to find my page. She flipped over several pages, and there was her name written across the top of a page. Almost breathlessly, she read what was written underneath her name. Oh God, God, my heart is broken. This girl is breaking my heart. She won't listen to me. I've tried everything I know to do. I've prayed. I've wept. I've talked. She dishonors me. She won't obey me. God, please give me some type of deliverance. The girl was awestruck. She said to the evangelist, I didn't know my daddy felt that way. I knew I didn't get along with daddy sometime, but I didn't think it was that bad. Oh, yes, I guess I did oppose him. And there were times I wasn't sweet to him, but I didn't think it was that bad. And she wound up her visit with these words. Oh, if I only had 24 hours to be with my father, I would make everything right. Oh, if God would only give me 24 hours. Are you loyal?